This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
It is 10 o'clock on this Friday. Three Man Front. Landrum Pat, John Saber. Hopefully you're geared up for what could and should be a really exciting weekend of college football. And boy, it was exciting. Got started last night. What a game we had. Louisiana and Ohio. Woo!
Oh, I thought you were talking about the NFL game, Landrum.
Peel paint off your wall. Louisiana, the Fighting Billy Napiers, they do get it done.
They covered. That's all
over
that matters.
The Frank Solich-less Ohio Bobcats, bad football team. But Louisiana did what they're supposed to do. You're supposed to beat Ohio, 20.5-point favorite. And luckily, we got the second half cover.
49 points by Louisiana. You're right. More than it scored in its first two games total, which was 45.
They had a freshman go for four touchdowns last night.
Mm-hmm. They did.
Bobcats, not good, Pat.
No, they're not. They're going to struggle in the MAC this year, but can't wait for the Tuesday nights.
But at least we've scouted them, and we know when we have action on Tuesday nights that we probably got a good idea if they can cover a line or, you know, bet against them, make some money.
I mean, think about this. We've already got a progress or a status report on Bowling Green because they played Tennessee, and obviously we know about Akron because they played Auburn, and now we saw Ohio last night.
I got a little bit of Ball State when I was
paying attention to Penn State.
Mm-hmm. So got a little bit of that. Yeah, I feel like we're ahead of the game there. And
we probably know
Michigan
more
in Western Michigan
that's,
as well.
That's correct. We know more about the MAC than probably people in Ohio.
That we are your voice for MAC football. You're on Three Man Front.
Maction.
Yeah, we did have NFL last night.
That was Giants. A good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. The Giants and the Washington football team. And Dexter Lawrence got to be kicking himself. The offside penalty. Field goal was no good. They get to kick it again. What happens? You give a guy a second chance. He nails it.
I don't think Dexter Lawrence is the only one kicking himself on that team.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of...
Galladay, maybe?
Yeah. Well, Galladay for calling out Daniel Jones. They're on the sideline, visibly frustrated. But or yes, what happened?
Maybe that wide open pass. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you win last night? Did you take that game?
Yeah. Told Thursday Night Underdogs, NFL, baby.
What was that, 3.5?
Yeah. So that worried me a little bit, but once the Giants caught that interception
and went for the field goal,
I knew that I was like, all right, at least Washington's winning the game, but it's not by a touchdown.
A lot of criticism why they didn't try to stick it in the end zone, you know, why they played conservative just to go ahead and kick that field goal with time left on the clock and it burned them.
And it's understandable because ironically, you have a quarterback who's turnover prone who didn't have a turnover that day. But they were probably afraid of him turning it over, and you had 3 points. You at least could extend the lead. So okay, cool. Let's not mess with it. But who's last I checked, their play caller is not Lane Kiffin, is it?
But you know what though? I mean, Graham Gano, he had 5 field goals in the game. Why not let him kick another one? Right? He was 5 for 5. Had 2 extra points.
He was a star.
He was a star on my fantasy team. Thanks, Graham.
How about this? In the history of these two franchises playing each other, this is the first time ever that Washington has had a walk-off win against the Giants on the final play of the game. Is that not crazy to think the number of times that these two franchises have played each other?
I guess it is a little bit wild when you think about it, yeah.
Two NFC East rivals that have played each other twice, my goodness, as far back as I can remember, probably late 70s when the divisional formats was set up in the NFL. So, my goodness. That's a lot of football between these two.
It is. We got more football coming up tonight. College football. Gus Malzahn, UCF, taking on Louisville.
It's a big one for UCF. The reason why, if you look at their schedule the next couple weeks, it's pretty much some patsies. So if they get this one tonight on the road and then win the next 2 weeks, then you're talking about a 5-0 UCF team, and you're going to start hearing some of those rumblings about this UCF team in the conversation for maybe that group of five team that could upset the apple cart in the college football playoff.
You know, the last time these two teams met, I remember the game. What a fantastic game it was. UCF taking on Louisville. Blake Bortles throws a couple of touchdowns to lead them past Teddy Bridgewater and Louisville. That Friday night game, electric atmosphere, and UCF shocks them. But that's hard to believe. You know, you think about these two teams, but that's the last time that they met. And then in 2014, following that game, they announced this game for 2021 and the home-and-home in 2022.
Yeah. It's a big one for Gus Malzahn, especially obviously on national television and trying to get that program in that conversation towards the end of the year.
And based on what we've seen from Louisville, Gus needs to, with the criticism that he got, and albeit they came back and they won the game in week one, but how they started against Boise State, can't afford to do that against this Louisville team.
Now, you need to get out fast. You need to get a lead, and we saw Louisville against Ole Miss, and so I think UCF will be able to do that. I think they just need to get that offense and Dylan Gabriel going in the way that they need it to get in, especially during this Malzahn offense.
Okay, you got Big Ten action tonight. If you're into that, Maryland taking on Brett Bielema.
You know, I was into that Friday night Big Ten stuff back when the season started, but not so much now.
Mm. Maryland's actually 2-0, and they beat West Virginia to start the season.
Tonga Bailoa has played pretty well.
Yeah, he actually has. Genetics.
Guess so.
Yeah, not the only one in the family with the arm. Of course, coming up tomorrow, we're focused on two big games involving two teams from this state. We'll start with the 2:30 game and go in that order. Alabama taking on Florida, the Swamp, 2:30. Anthony Richardson still up in the air. Some people leaning the way that, yeah, he's fine. He's going to play. Nothing to see here. And then others saying, I'm kind of skeptical hearing. He's been limited. Not really doing much. How many reps is he taking? Regardless, they got to put somebody out there. We know Emory Jones is going to be a part of that plan. But for Alabama, what's the big concern?
Well, I think the big concern is just the consistency with the offensive line, because if you can get that consistency at the offensive line, then you're going to be able to run the football. The fundamentals of the running game, that's something that Nick Saban said last night during his coach's show. They need to improve the fundamentals of the running game, and to do that, they've got to get that line playing better. But from a defensive standpoint, Landrum, all indications are that Will Anderson is good to go. We've been hearing all week long that he's been practicing, and Nick Saban said again last night on his radio show that he practiced on Thursday. He's showing progress. He said he did more today than he did all week. But I want to go back to the offense. It's going to be key for them. There is an experienced Florida defensive line. In my opinion, that defensive line is better than what Miami brought to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
No doubt.
In week one. The defensive backfield for Florida, that is something that if Bryce Young is given time, I think they can manipulate and they can take control of the game throwing the football. But if you can't win up front and having the linebacker out, that's big for Florida. Yes, his backup has had a lot of time, but we've seen in years past when there's injuries at Auburn or Alabama at that middle linebacking position, that can become problematic. So I think the key for Alabama is the offensive line has to play well to be able to give Bryce Young time and also fundamentally open up the holes that can get the running game going.
And we know the pressure that Todd Grantham is going to bring. Zachary Carter is going to be a big part of that. He leads the Gators in sacks this season with 3. But also guys like Diabate, Daquan Newkirk, who's there on the defensive line. You're right. You got experience. You got veterans. You've got guys that are not going to be stepping in, especially there at home, the crowd behind them against this Alabama team and being deer in headlights.
Yeah, and also Gary Danielson, who'll be calling the game for CBS, another year of listening to Gary Danielson opine on Saturday afternoons. I know a lot of people like to turn the volume down on Saturdays when he is doing, whether it's an Alabama or Auburn game.
Is that the most disliked college football analyst on television, you think?
It's right up there, I think. Gary is 70 years old. Not sure if he will call it quits once this package goes on to ESPN.
I don't know.
But we'll see. But he said in an interview he gave down in Mobile, he said Florida has to run their quarterback. It has to be part of their offense. If they can't run their quarterback, their offense is going to break down. I've witnessed maybe 8 or 10 losses we've done, talking about Alabama games. And in all those losses, quarterback play was exceptional. That's the key to the game. Last night on Bud Light Game Night, you and I were talking about Nick Fitzgerald, what kind of success he had against Alabama. If you think back to that game in 2017 where the Bulldogs lost to Alabama 31-24, but Fitzgerald ran for 66 yards and had a score. And Mississippi State also, if you remember that game, they converted 8 of 15 on third down. So if you're a Florida fan, I think that is what you're hoping for, the recipe for their success against this much experienced Alabama defense, is if you go 8 for 15 on third down and your quarterback runs for 66 yards or more, then that means that Florida could possibly be in this game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and we think, you know, the dual threats, what they've been able to do against Nick Saban defenses, as you mentioned, you go back to 2013. If you want to go to Auburn, what Nick Marshall was able to do.
It's a good example.
You go to 2010, Cam Newton, what he was able to do. But it's not always the case because you had an example of what Jarrett Stidham being able to get it done.
Yeah, correct? You had Stephen Garcia.
Yeah.
You know, he threw for like 200-something yards, but I don't think he had that many on the ground. So, but that's just, again, that this is the Dan Mullen offense is a good running quarterback, and I think it is a good example to look back at 2017 and how Nick Fitzgerald, how he played for Mississippi State and that offense, what it was predicated on for their success.
No doubt. Nick Saban, what he had to say last night, I know that he had his usual weekly coaches show, but we have not gotten a temperamental, disgruntled Nick Saban this week like we did prior to last week's game versus Mercer.
Well, I think what he's trying to do, and we've seen this story out of the playbook before, is the FCS week. You try to make everybody realize that your team is not as good as who they were the week before, whoever they played. And then you got to try to get the team back. You don't hear a lot of criticism for Nick Saban this week. I've heard it's been a very lively week of practices, a lot of emotion. So maybe that emotion can be bottled into success, and the fundamental things that he says they need to clean up will get done tomorrow. It's a quick trip. I believe they're flying down sometime this afternoon, and they'll be back tomorrow night in Tuscaloosa. So a very quick turnaround for the Tide.
Wet conditions expected there in Gainesville.
Yeah.
If you start looking at what these two teams like to do, I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing for Florida, because you know that they're going to run, but you can't try to make them one-dimensional. And if you can account for that running quarterback, which is a lot of times hard to do, I guess maybe it would work as a disadvantage, because Alabama, you could make him one-dimensional, predictable, and then if that means Emory Jones trying to throw darts against that defense, yeah, it's going to be a long day for Florida.
Well, I gave the stat last night on Bud Light Game Night. The last quarterback who threw an interception and beat Alabama, 2014, Cardale Jones.
Third-string quarterback, man.
He had a game.
Ooh, he did have
a game. Wow.
He was slinging it that night. It was one bad sling. So Alabama, 14.5-point favorite, 2:30 tomorrow. Meanwhile, we get Auburn and Penn State there in primetime, 6:30 on ABC. You start looking at these matchups, I've continued to just kind of break this game down. And I think that there is a real possibility that Auburn's defense can get after Sean Clifford.
So you think this game is well under the total? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say Auburn wasn't going to be able to score, but what is the total right now? Because I know the line's 5.5.
I have to look. I have not checked this.
I could see this game. I could see this game possibly going under 50, though. Yeah. So what? 24-21. I mean, possibly even a 24-13, something like that.
So you're confident Auburn can move the football?
I think Auburn can move the football. I really do. Now, they're going to have to account on the offensive line. They're going to be tested. The kid, Arnold Ibukati, who is the transfer from Temple, he's 6'3", 250-pound, athletic defensive end. He can get after the quarterback. The interior of that defensive line, though, I think Nick Broms and co, they can – Brandon Council, they can open up enough where Tank Bisbee, he's shown he doesn't need a whole lot of daylight.
It's 52, by the way.
52?
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with the under on that. But he doesn't need a whole lot of daylight. Yeah, I think Auburn can move the football. I really do. I'm starting to get this feeling that Auburn is going to be ready to play. The whole environment, the wideout, Beaver Stadium. I think Brian Harsin's kind of prepared for that.
The spread has gone down 0.5 point. Auburn was a 5.5-point underdog. They're currently a 5-point underdog.
Hmm.
Go ahead, load up. That little twinkle in your eye, I saw it.
I don't know. I feel like Auburn's
going to. You just got 0.5 point from last night to this morning.
And then my question is also with Auburn's defense, Sean Clifford, the inability for them to be able to run the ball. They got Noah Cain. Of course, that's the guy who went down the first game last season versus Indiana, coming back this year. But I don't know if they can run behind the offensive line that front. So if it's on Sean Clifford's shoulders, they got Dotson on the outside who's been really good. He's a playmaker. But do they have enough weapons where they can just go up top? And I don't know if they can. I think Auburn has more weapons on that side of the ball.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a great game. The atmosphere, the lead up, everything involved. It's going to be a great Saturday. Don't forget UAB football tomorrow night. They kick off Conference USA play going up against University of North Texas.
Yep.
UAB about a 14-point favorite in that game going on the road. So we'll see if the Blazers can rebound after that tough loss between the hedges.
Yeah, didn't play North Texas last year, but prior to that, that's when they clinched another West Division title, beating them 26-21 there in Denton. Seth Luttrell, he's got a transfer quarterback from North Carolina.
Who couldn't beat out Sam Howell, huh?
No, and he's thrown four interceptions so far this year.
Ouch.
Two last were versus SMU, but I was impressed with the North Texas defense for about, 28 minutes of that game. And then Tanner Mordecai, SMU, kind of took over.
Yeah.
800-239-WJOX, 834-9450. We open up the phone lines to you on Football Fridays and get you to sound off. It's kind of your final take, your final opportunity to sound like a genius or a moron on Monday.
And one other thing to pass along, since we were talking about UAB yesterday afternoon, Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, he had an article where he cited sources that as of right now, the American Athletic Conference, the AAC, they're looking at Air Force, Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, and UAB as possible targets for an expansion of the AAC.
Can you just give me an explanation? I understand all of those, but Colorado State.
I don't know, unless you're just wanting to go ahead and destroy the Mountain West.
Yeah,
that's
seems
the,
like it.
That's the only thing that I can think of.
It's like, hey, can we come too? Yeah, come on. Because Colorado State, I mean, with all the other schools, you see what value they would bring. I don't know. I mean, the football program's down. The eyeballs that are going to be tuned in to watch a Colorado State matchup it's going to be minimal. What are we doing here?
Yeah. It's just nice that Dennis Dodd woke up and thinks that UAB,
cool helmet.
Obviously some people close to the AAC have told him that, yes, UAB is going to be one of those schools that we're going to look at quickly. Footballscoop.com, they had a nice portion about UAB. They said, as they were citing this story, they said UAB feels like a shoe-in to join the once invited. No one seems to be happy in Conference USA, and the school has just as much history with Memphis and Tulane as its CUSA bunkmates. So that's a good thought that, again, they've got history with those other schools. Why not put them in the same conference? Meanwhile, the Athletic, they pointed out in an article 2 days ago that the AAC presidents, they are looking at athletic department budgets that range between $40 and $60 million, but they are willing to look at schools if they have a commitment to football and they're in the $30 million range in their athletic department budget. And just so happens, UAB fits that bill. They're paying Bill Clark $1.5 million, and obviously Andy Kennedy has the basketball program going in the right direction.
So does this mean that if, fingers crossed, win, UAB gets in the American Athletic Conference, we're going to be front and center with all this autonomous, the Power Six crap that the AAC pulls?
I think so, yes.
Oh, okay. So just when we thought we got rid of the whole UCF championship, now we're going to be...
Now we're going to be claiming championships.
We're going to be, yeah, in the forefront of, oh, it's the Power Six. Okay. Oh, all right.
But I do find it interesting because...
Get your T-shirts now.
In the Athletics article, they were talking about how they, according to the presidents of the AAC, they're looking at schools in which their commitment to football, where they're paying their coaches at least $1 million a year.
$1 million really isn't that much, though.
It's not, but knowing that you're paying Bill
Clark
$1.5 million.
Well, but it seems like they found their targets, and they just made sure that they all fit that criteria after the fact, not prior to going and looking at those schools, thus eliminating other schools who wanted to be under consideration.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. John is in Huntsville listening on the – John, welcome into – Three-man front. Happy Football Friday.
No, thank you. Hey, guys, real quick, I got a comment and a question. As far as this Alabama-Florida game, man, all games are big to me. And I'm concerned about all of them. I'm like Whip Sanderson. I'm happier that we didn't lose than I am that we won after a game. Yeah. But quickly, question. Did Tank Bigsby and Emory Jones play together at the same high school in LaGrange, Georgia?
Ooh. That is a great question.
So I know they're both from LaGrange, and if they did, man, that would have been a wicked football team.
Well, yeah. Tank went to Callaway.
Callaway, that's right.
Yeah. It's in the city of LaGrange,
right.
But I don't know. I don't think he. Oh, I know he graduated from there. I don't think he went. Excuse me. I assume he went there all 4 years.
Yes.
To what now?
They went to different high schools in the same city.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, still, though, it would have been fun to go to Friday night games in LaGrange when they were both playing.
Ooh. Yes, it would have.
I don't know. Yep. Tank would have gotten enough touches based on what Emory did as a dual-threat quarterback. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But anyway, thanks a lot, guys, and roll tide.
Appreciate the call.
Roll
Thank
tide,
you.
John. Yeah, you don't think it's a big game. Just lose it. A legendary coach or two once said that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll continue talking college football. When you're getting ready for college football coming up tonight, how about happy hour? No one does happy hour like Twin Peaks, whatever your preference. They have everything from tequila cocktails, an extensive bourbon category, to top shelf spirits, and cocktails served over ice balls. Local craft beers, handcrafted whiskey cocktails, round out an adventurous drink menu second to none. Don't forget about the 29-degree man-size drafts. It's Twin Peaks. They're in Hoover, Twin Peaks. Never settle. Kyle Parmley will break down the high school action coming up at Barrett Sully at CBSSports.com. We'll take an in-depth look at Florida, Alabama, Auburn, Penn State, and other big games going on nationally. You're welcome to weigh in as well. 800-239-WJOX, 834-9450. What are the keys for an Auburn win? What are the keys for Alabama to take care of business in Gainesville? We want to hear from you. It's three-man front on this Friday, and your voice of college football, Jocks 94.5.
This is Three Man Front.
Football Friday, Jocks 94.5. Pat Smith, Landrum Roberts, John Saber with you. Matt McLaren's show coming up at noon. Of course, then Paul Feinbaum is at 2 o'clock. Regular preventative maintenance is important with something you depend on as much as your home comfort system. Protect your investment with a system inspection from a trained comfort specialist. Your comfort is their top priority. That's why Trane is America's most reliable and trusted brand and the official partner of Jocks. Find a specialist near you at Trane.com. It's hard to stop a Trane. A lot of people, they're following the moves of Arch Manning, who is the number one recruit in the 2023 cycle. He is now set to visit the Ole Miss-Alabama game in Tuscaloosa in a couple weeks. The nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning is expected to be in attendance for that big game between the Rebels and the Tide on October 2nd. Manning, as you know, is a junior. He is the number one rated overall recruit in the 2023 class. He will visit Georgia, South Carolina this Saturday before his trip 2 weeks later to Tuscaloosa, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, Texas, and Ole Miss are on his list. Arch Manning previously made a visit to Alabama in June after the NCAA reopened the in-person recruiting, so not a big shock that he's chosen Landrum, the Ole Miss Alabama game, for the game that he's coming to Tuscaloosa.
No,
and the ties, obviously, with Ole Miss, that would make sense because you would think that the system that Lane Kiffin runs, that'd be a good fit for Arch Manning. Tennessee, while they need a quarterback, I don't know if going and playing for Jais Heupel is something that intrigues him. Georgia, man, they got so many 4 and 5 stars already on their roster,
yeah,
just to go and try to navigate that quarterback room. That doesn't seem like an ideal fit. Alabama would be interesting. What if he just said, you know what, I'm gonna do my own thing. I don't want any ties to anything that you guys have done. I'm going to Alabama.
Don't you think the LSU one, though? I know that he's in the state of Louisiana.
That's got to burn them up.
But I mean, he's got them listed as one of the potential schools.
But don't you think if you're LSU, you're sitting there thinking, what have we done wrong to the Manning family? I mean, think about it.
I know.
All the talent that has come out of that state and none of them.
They go to Ole Miss, the biggest rival of LSU, or at least most people will.
The Manning boys grew up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. I mean, I guess that's what it is. It's, you know, let's go and let's venture out.
All right,
out.
So let's look at these schools that
outside
he's got listed.
Boot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clemson, Georgia, LSU, Texas is very interesting to me. All indications are he had a really nice time in Austin.
He could probably do well there at Texas, given Hudson Card and Casey Thompson, who's going to get the start this week.
Not to mention the fact that if you look at the timing of things,
mm-hmm,
by the time that he would be on campus, probably be about the time that Texas is coming to the SEC.
That's right, because he's just a junior.
That's correct. So I keep saying 2023 for Texas and Oklahoma. He would be a freshman.
The only criticism I've heard of this kid, and he's still a kid, and he looks like an incredible talent, is the level of competition that he plays at. The schools that he is playing, not exactly.
Doesn't quite live up to the status that he currently holds in the 247 rankings?
No, but we've seen other guys that have played at lower classifications that have gone on to have incredible
They've done really
careers.
Well.
If that's the case, then he should really strongly consider Clemson.
That's true. He would fit right in based on the fact that Clemson plays nobody in the ACC.
That's a really good point.
But, yeah, you brought up the Georgia roster. I mean, Alabama's not too shabby either, have coming in at quarterback.
Yeah, but, I mean, a lot of this, if I'm a junior and I've got unlimited visits that I'm going to be able
to take,
I'm going to go to every one of them. I'm going to make a tour of all the places that I ever wanted to watch a college football game.
So let me see here. Looking at that list, I don't see a Pac-12 team.
Does Germany have football? No. Does New Zealand have football? Let me see. Let me visit Hawaii. Let me see what Turks and Caicos.
Hawaii, they figured this out a long time ago with the whole like going and taking a visit. I don't know what you have to do, but they have a criteria that you have to like pass a test to see if you're genuinely interested in going to Hawaii just because of the expense.
Man,
because
that recruiting budget would be shot in a heartbeat.
It would be shot in a heartbeat. But man, if you could get a talent like that, woo, that'd be pretty incredible.
All right, so if you're
Ryan
handicapping
Gay, Jim Harbaugh.
If you're handicapping this right now, this second, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, Texas, Ole Miss, Bama. Who's the leader right now? Just in your mind. You don't know the kid. You don't know the family. I'm just saying, if you were handicapping it right now of those schools, give me the top three. I won't go that far. Just give me the top three that you think when it becomes close to decision day, that will be in the mix for him.
I think that Ole Miss will be in the mix.
Okay.
I think that Texas will be in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I will throw out Alabama.
I don't disagree with that three.
I'm very surprised that Florida's not getting mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the history that Dan Mullen has with putting quarterbacks in the league.
True.
That's very surprising to me.
Maybe he doesn't fit the criteria for a typical Dan Mullen quarterback.
It's interesting because the people that I talked to at Ole Miss, they've been consistent with me, telling me that he will be mentioned or Ole Miss will be mentioned as a possible destination for him, but don't take it seriously.
So that's just a courtesy?
Pretty much.
I wonder if it started that way, but with Kiffin there, it's like, maybe at least it's worth a look now.
It could change easily. But yeah, as of maybe early this summer, that's true. You never know.
Maybe the family's not a fan of Kiffin.
Maybe Peyton did not like the way Lane Kiffin handled himself on Rocky Top.
But then again, Eli's got to be loving what he's doing now. So,
but yeah, the Ole Miss people, they've said, look, he will be mentioned. He will mention Ole Miss as one of his destinations.
So who do they think? Who do the Ole Miss people think?
Wasn't Duke on his list too?
I think at one point,
out of courtesy for Cutcliffe.
For Uncle David.
They believe that it will come down to possibly Georgia and Alabama.
Well, if that's the case,
and Ohio State's going to love him. Once he goes to Georgia and then
once he transfers.
Ryan Day, congratulations.
But see, I think Texas, I'm just reading the reports out of Austin and they're going to spin it a certain way. But the meetings that he had with Sarkisian, the time around campus, I think Texas is going to be one of those three when it's all said and done.
Being them joining the SEC has got to be a huge part of it.
No question.
If they're still a member of the Big 12, as appealing as that might be to go, you're not.
I think that he probably would end up going to Oklahoma before he would go to Texas if they were just Big 12 schools.
But again, Oklahoma, which has recently been a quarterback factor, not that he needs to be one, but I mean, I'm pretty sure he's headed on the trajectory towards the league. It's very interesting that the two schools that have coaches there that have consistently put QBs in the league are not even getting looked at.
Yeah.
And this is the son of Cooper, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Was Cooper, didn't, I've heard Cooper was considered the best athlete of the Blue Boys.
Cooper allegedly was. Yeah, and he hurt his back.
But yeah, but I mean, he had to move. I mean, he wasn't a stand back there and do nothing quarterback like his brothers.
Wow.
Cooper's a trip though. Got to the entire Manning family came in one night to it was a restaurant and. He was a trip. I mean, he was like running around going to like, cause everybody was wanting, you know, Peyton and Eli's autographs. And he would go over to the tables and this was 20 something years ago. I mean, Cooper was probably, you know, 20, 27, 28 years old, but he was running around all the tables that had the hot women. Like, I'll get you your autograph. No problem. He was a trip. Looked like he'd been a lot of fun to hang out with.
I mean, think about how the full circle to this, the Manning family, the dynasty, when you look at Archie, and then with Peyton and Eli, and then now Cooper's son, who could be wrapping up this whole dynasty by being the number one ranked player coming out in 2 years.
Golly, man.
No wrapping up. Peyton's got a boy. Yeah. I mean, it'll take some time, but.
Yeah.
6'4", 215 pounds, Arch Manning. Good size. We'll see. My guess, if it comes down between Alabama and Georgia, I'm going to go Bama.
You're going to go Bama?
Yeah.
Again, he's going to be in attendance for the Ole Miss game October 2nd at Bryant-Denny.
All right, speaking of Ole Miss, we got other games coming up in the SEC this weekend. Not a really busy slate. We know the two marquee games we're talking about and have been talking about and previewing, Alabama, Florida, Auburn, and Penn State. But for Ole Miss, they get a Tulane team that's coming in. I think Ole Miss wins the football game. I have told you, though, I do believe that Tulane can put up some points. Been really impressed with their offense, albeit didn't play anybody last week in the blowout win. But what they were able to do against Oklahoma and scoring 30, I think that they can come near that number just based on what I've seen from a quarterback that's out of Boca Raton, and he's just not scared. Hadn't thrown an interception yet this year either. Had three touchdown passes against Oklahoma too last week in a lettuce game. But that should be interesting. And some of the other interesting games, when you look at this LSU football team, don't sleep on Central Michigan coming down. I mean, can you imagine? Coach O will not be in that building on Monday.
No.
If he loses that game to Central Michigan based on his standing.
He will not. That would be the equivalent of probably Arkansas losing to the Citadel when that Sunday afternoon, Monday morning, they called my good friend Jack Crow in the office and said, sorry, Frank Bowles said, enough's enough. We're gonna make a change. I think that would happen down in Baton Rouge.
Another battle of one SEC school taking on another. This game really not being talked about either. Mississippi State coming off the big win over NC State, taking on undefeated Memphis, who scores a lot of points. They don't play very much defense. This could be a high-scoring affair. 3 o'clock ESPN2 as they play in the Liberty Bowl coming up on Saturday.
Memphis has scored a lot of points. They had a really big time back and forth.
Arkansas State, 55-50.
So I'm not sure if Arkansas State just didn't have any defense or this Memphis offense, which has been prolific over the last couple of years, whether that's going to be a team that you need to pay attention to, especially in the AAC this year.
All right, so South Carolina, they got the shutout week one. They played really good defense against East Carolina and got a win in week two. 31.5-point dogs taking on Georgia. Can they keep it under that number, I guess, is the question.
Only one time in the history of this series has Georgia beaten South Carolina by 32 points. Never more than 32 points, but they've beaten them once by 32. So take that in consideration if you're filling out your office football pool.
And riding a one-game winning streak,
yeah.
Both of these teams, you got Vandy and Stanford coming up tomorrow. Clark Lee, they got the big one over Colorado State. 7 o'clock ESPNU as they host Stanford. Battle of the brains.
I saw a useless stat this week and had to do a double take. I did not do research to make sure that it was correct. I'm sure it was. I believe this is the first time that Stanford has ever been a road opponent to an SEC team in their stadium. First time. And the reason this game was put together was back when Derek Mason was the head coach at Vanderbilt.
Right.
That he was an assistant coach at Stanford before he came to Vanderbilt. So they worked this deal out to come to Nashville and play Vandy. But if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time that Stanford has ever been the visiting team in an SEC stadium.
That's hard to believe. They went to Central Florida and played there before they came to the SEC?
Correct.
Shame on you. David Shaw. He just
they've
is
never
not,
co- even,
he not like
not
the
even
SEC.
Vanderbilt?
No.
Think so.
That's wild to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Which school is harder to get into, Stanford or Vandy?
Stanford.
Stanford is?
Yeah, I tried.
Oh.
I know that answer.
There you go.
Did you try Vanderbilt?
Yeah. That's why I know the answer.
Oh. A guy's got the answers for the big games in high school football coming up tonight. Kyle Parmley. He joins us next with a prep preview on Three Man Front, Jocks 94.5.
Three Man Front, weekdays.
Right here on Jocks.
Jocks 94.5.
Three Man Front of Football Friday. We got high school football coming up. Kyle Parmley is going to join us momentarily. I tell you all the time about my friends at Archetype Health in Homewood. Over 2 years ago, down in my back, literally couldn't move, excruciating pain. I haven't had any pain since. When I thought surgery was my last resort, I went to Archetype Health there in Homewood. It's not just chiropractic care, it's total fitness. Think of, I don't know, a spa. Think of a fitness center. Think of physical therapy, chiropractic care, nutrition. If all of those things had a baby, that would be Archetype Health. Archetype.health. That's where you can find the information. Located right there in Homewood off Highway 31. Dr. John Morgan and his staff, they're wonderful. Or you can give them a call, 205-803-1234. It's Archetype Health. They're in Homewood. Tell them the guys from Three Man Front and Jocks 94.5 sent you. Sending us the latest in all of high school football news. Kyle Parmley joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. Kyle, hope you're doing well. Before we break down some of the games tonight, how about a performance by Briarwood's quarterback, Christopher Vezina, last night? It's not about the quantity of passes. It's all about the quality, and he was pretty efficient.
Oh, man. Hey, guys, it's good to be on again. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, he threw 5 touchdowns last night, and only 3 balls hit the ground. So I'd say that when you throw more touchdowns than incompletions, it's not a bad night, right? So, yeah, Briarwood really looked good last night. They had the advantage against Huffman, but they came out and played well. So this Briarwood team's 5-0. We're starting to move towards a potential Briarwood Mountain Brook game in a few weeks for what could be the region title. So yeah, the Lions and Spartans are both rounding into form as we get to the midway point. So it's going to be fun to see.
There's 2 really big matchups tonight in 7A in Birmingham Metro, and all 4 of the teams undefeated in the region, undefeated on the season. And I'm talking about Hewitt at Thompson and also Hoover Oak Mountain. Kind of talk a little bit about both of those games and how important it is for each one of these schools to try to get out with a win.
Yeah, so I'm going to be at the Hewitt-Trustful-Thompson game tonight. And as we've seen so far, Thompson has looked, you know, pretty much unbeatable. But this will be their best test to date by far. Hewitt-Trustful comes in 4-0. They've really played well for the most part for the first 4 games. And it's going to be one of those nights where if Hewitt's going to have a chance to compete, they're going to have everything go well. They're going to have to play well. They're going to have to limit penalties and turnovers. They're going to have to play just about as good as they can play and hope that Thompson isn't, you know, clicking on all cylinders. But, I mean, Hewitt-Trustful has proven that they're a program that can play in these big games, and they haven't necessarily been able to win all of them over the last few years. But, you know, it's kind of cool to see because Cade Carruth has been the starting quarterback for 3 years now at Hewitt, and he's got a great rapport with Omari Kelly, who's committed to Auburn. And even the backfield, you know, we all knew about Armani Goodwin and Sean Jackson last year, but James Hammonds has really stepped up this year and given them some big games. So we'll have to see. I know Thompson finally allowed a point last week. So, you know, they've given up 3 points on the season now in 4 games. So Hewitt's got their hands full. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to getting out there tonight. And then, you know, the other one you mentioned, Hoover at Oak Mountain, 4-0 versus 4-0. And on paper, you have to give Hoover the edge. I mean, Hoover's looked really good so far this year. And that's even without, you know, a full complement of guys, whether it's, you know, some contact tracing issues or an injury here and there. But they've looked really good. And Oak Mountain is kind of sneaking up on some folks, 4-0. They've done it with really good defense, and Evan Smith is a really good quarterback. So Oak Mountain is going to have to really, really play well tonight to have a chance. But yeah, it's always fun when you get the schedule to match up like that, when all 4 unbeatens in Region 3 are facing off against one another.
Well, you got a team in Vestavia Hills under new first-year head coach Sean Calhoun taking over for Buddy Anderson. 0-4, didn't look that bad last week, and they actually led Oak Mountain for a majority of that game before falling 24-14. They travel to Tuscaloosa to take on a 1-3 Wildcat team. Seems like Vestavia could be in a really good spot to pick up Sean Calhoun's first win.
Yeah, I put it on Twitter a couple of days ago. I think this is the week. This is going to be the night that Vestavia picks up their first win of the year. I've heard 0-4 is not the start that anybody within Vestavia Hills program or the community wants. But, you know, hearing some people talk about how, you know, they've just gotten blown out for four games and all that, it's just simply not true. I mean, there's been two of those games they have been run away from against Mountain Brook and Hoover teams that are really, really good in their own right. But the other two games, like you mentioned, last week's game against Oak Mountain, Vestavia led that game going into the fourth quarter and just, you know, they didn't make the plays down the stretch. So this Rebels team they're learning that there's so much new going on this year after having a coach and Buddy Anderson there for so long. There's a lot of growing, a lot of learning that has to go on, and they're getting a little bit better each week. And, you know, it's coming, you know, and it may not be this year that they put together a big run, but that program is building. And, I think tonight's a great opportunity to get win number one.
In 6A, you've got Pinson and Jackson Olin. Talk a little bit about those two teams and what you expect.
Well, we all know Pinson Valley's got they've got it rolling, and, you know, they've looked apart in the last 3 weeks. You know, they played Hewitt Trussell to open the season, and that's a tough matchup for any 6A team. But the last few weeks, Pinson's they've started to get some chemistry together and really looking good. And J.O. is a team that's not on many people's radar, but they're 3-0, and they have looked really impressive. Tim Bukakis does such a good job down there. And I wouldn't be surprised if they give Pinson a run tonight. I'm not sitting here predicting the upset or anything, but, yeah, I don't think Pinson is going to go into this game and win 50-0 by any stretch of the imagination. J.O. is hosting the game, and they've been playing really well so far this season. So, yeah, I mean, look out for this one. I don't know that I'd see the upset, but I could definitely see a really good game coming.
All right, Kyle, another big game coming up. You've got a undefeated Helena team taking on Pelham. Won't be a long bus drive to head over to the stadium, but these two teams should be an exciting night of football there in that community.
Hey, there's definitely a lot of a lot of motivation for both of these teams. You know, Helena was formed from the split with Pelham. So this is a game that means a lot to a lot of the people in both communities and within the school systems. And both teams are off to a good start this year. This is not, you know, not one of those games that, you know, both teams are just playing for bragging rights. I mean, both teams have expectations this year, and particularly Helena, they have really looked strong the first four games of the season. And Pelham's only slipped up once, and they've played well so far too. So this is a game that, you know, I think I would give the edge to Helena, but hey, rivalry game, two pretty good teams. You never know what happens in those, right?
No question about that. I wanted to ask you a non-on-the-field question, because this is the second year, and then we will have the reassignments, the reclassifications based on, obviously, the populations of the students at certain schools. We saw a big move last time when Mountain Brook went from 7A to 6A. Are you hearing any rumblings what maybe the landscape potentially could look like in December in regards to Asha and when they start looking at these schools? Could we see some movement for maybe some bigger schools dropping down to a lower classifications or some schools moving up?
You will definitely see some movement, because there are schools, especially in the Shelby County area locally, that, you know, the Helenas and the Chelseas, I mean, they are growing at an unbelievable pace. And, you know, it wouldn't be surprising. Helena especially is one that they, if not this classification, most certainly the next one. I mean, Helena will be a 7A school before too long. And there's a lot of things like that, and you have to consider, well, okay, you say a couple schools move up, somebody's got to move down. So it's kind of jarring still to see Mountain Brook down in 6A, but they've adapted and done really well down there. And there's also I don't have any, you know, backing to this, but, you know, I've heard a lot of people, you know, suggest that maybe 7A could be in line for an expansion. You know, maybe they move up from the 32 teams into something like a 48 team realm or something like that. I mean, there's plenty of possibilities on the table, but you're right. There's a lot of schools that are rapidly growing that could move up to 7A, and that would be one of those kind of shocks to the system, like Mountain Brook not being in the highest classification this round. So, yeah, no, it is going to be interesting come December because, I mean, you know, population shift and schools move up and down.
Yeah, and that was going to be my follow-up because, obviously, you and I run into the same people around high school football and would not be surprised if Chelsea and Helena jump up to 7A next time around. So, Kyle, listen, we always appreciate your time. Have fun tonight. I'll see you down there in Alabaster. Probably going to be leaving the station soon just to make it down 65 South. So, as always, thank you for joining us, and I'll see you tonight.
Yeah, no kidding, Pat. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks.
I appreciate it. Kyle Parmley, sports editor there for Starnes Publishing, joining us in the Bud Light Hotline. Carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there.
So why were you laughing about me going ahead and leaving down 65 South on a Friday night?
Somebody else I used to know that because of traffic would want to leave like 3 hours early.
Didn't you complain when you went to the beach?
Yeah.
A couple months ago?
I'm sorry?
Didn't you complain about 65 traffic?
And remember, he discovered Waze.
That's right. Yeah.
When I discovered Waze, yes.
Yeah.
And now his
what
life
different
is
ways
just,
to
wow.
be
there were five,
stuck in that same
five
traffic.
Different pileups. There was a barbecue. I think a
so
power
if
line
left
fell.
Early in enough time. Oh, okay.
We had a cattle truck that overtipped.
Wow.
It always happens when I'm on the road. Barrett Salee is next.
This is Three Man Front on Jax 94.5.